Choices. Christmas involves so many of them. And at Christmas, it's fair to say that they're mostly incidental choices. For example, the presents that we choose for one another aren't really that life-changing. Mind you, try telling a kid that. I remember Christmas as a 10-year-old when I was desperate for the latest personal computer, the Commodore 64. Christmas Day arrived and there was a box wrapped in orange tissue paper, I can see it now, which looked computer-shaped and my hopes were up. Upon opening it, I discovered a clarinet, which I dutifully put together and started sobbing into as I blew. However, some choices that we make are much more significant. We've seen that this week. Look at what happened in the Conservative Party and to the Prime Minister, Theresa May. On Wednesday, every Conservative Member of Parliament had to make a choice about whether to support the Prime Minister or not. And each one knew that their decision had the potential to significantly affect the country, not least with the Brexit discussions at such a delicate point. And that was another really significant choice that we all made some months ago. In the end, the decision boiled down to a simple question of whether to remain in or leave the European Union. And our choice as a nation has been dominating our collective consciousness ever since. There's not a day that goes by where we are not dealing with the results of that decision. Some choices that we make have life-changing consequences. For many of our young people, as their time at school nears an end, they have to decide whether to continue with study or not. If they decide to carry on with further education, then not only what to study, but where to study becomes a massive decision. There are open days and other important factors to take into consideration. How good the course is, what the lecturers are like, what the city is like. Another life-changing choice that many make is to get married. That perhaps is one of the biggest decisions we're ever likely to make, to say I do to another person and commit to marriage in sickness and in health, rich or poor, till death us do part. That decision dramatically changes our lives. Some choices that people make have history-changing consequences. The night of August the 27th, 1963, proved to be a sleepless one for Martin Luther King. He was due to give a speech at the Lincoln Memorial on the following day, so he stayed up late preparing notes. As he was delivering his speech, a singer by the name of Mahalia Jackson, who was stood to his side, shouted, "Tell them about the dream, Martin." King paused, went off script, and proceeded to deliver one of the most famous speeches of the 20th century. I have a dream. And you know, choices are made right here in the Christmas story. We see it very clearly in King Herod and the Magi, the wise men. King Herod goes to war against Jesus. The wise men go to worship him. We know the history. Listen again to Matthew's account. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who is born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. We've already been told by Matthew that Jesus is the long-expected King of the Jews. We've also been given the claim that Jesus is God himself, born to us. What is new here is that this message is a worldwide one. It is for every person of every nation. And these wise men from the east are an illustration of that. The God of the universe shines a star and uses it as a brilliant navigation system to guide these people to right where Jesus had been born. They really were riding on to Christmas. The famous "Driving Home for Christmas" by Chris Rea that gets played this time of year was written back in 1978 as Rea and his wife traveled from London to Middlesbrough for the Christmas break. They got caught in immense traffic, it started to snow, and the journey inspired the song. Well, these wise men made the first ever Christmas journey. And understanding the significance of the star, travel to worship King Jesus. The thing is, they don't precisely know Jesus' location, so they use some common sense and travel to where they think is the most likely place for the King of the Jews to be born, Jerusalem, Israel's capital. And here's the thing, there's already a king in the city, Herod, and when he hears what these wise men have to say, he's not happy. He does some more investigation about the King of the Jews and discovers some ancient prophecies that he was to be born in Bethlehem. And so he sends these wise men off to find him. Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I may go and worship him. We know from what happens later that worship is actually the last thing on Herod's mind. Herod chooses war. There's already a king in Jerusalem. He's it. And so this Jesus is immediately his rival. Herod isn't interested in worshipping Jesus. He's at war with him. He's planning to destroy this infant king who is a danger to his throne, a challenge to his power. And so when the wise men fail to return to Herod, he kills every baby boy 2 years old and under in Bethlehem and in the surrounding region. It's not the kind of thing we want to be speaking about at Christmas. But then we don't live in a Christmas-type world. All of us know that the food and gifts, the holidays and celebrations of this time of year, as good and wonderful as they are, cover over a world that experiences all kinds of brokenness and pain, starvation and need, sadness and destruction. When Jesus becomes a man and starts preaching and teaching, his diagnosis of the reason for this will be clear and startling. Listen to these historic words of Jesus later in Matthew's account. The things that come out of a person's mouth come from the heart, and these defile them. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. These are what defile a person. Herod's heart is a warring one, which spills over into all of his thinking and feeling, his relationships and reasoning. But let's not judge Herod too quickly. Don't we all display the same kinds of characteristics? Sadly, Christmas can be one of the most obvious times when our self-centeredness, impatience, anger, selfishness are most evident. There is war inside us, says Jesus. And that is seen by how we treat ourselves, others, and God. By nature, we reject the baby born in Bethlehem, God in human flesh, whose right it is to reign over our lives. We, like Herod, choose war. But the wise men choose worship. Matthew writes, on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It's clear that their hearts were genuinely open to God's revelation of himself in the sky, in a manger, in dreams. For that is how they're warned not to return to Herod. There really was room in their hearts for Jesus to see what God was doing in the world and to respond in worship. And this worship isn't off the cuff. It's been planned and prepared for. They arrive with costly gifts for Jesus the King. And this worship grows in understanding. They rightly interpret the sign in the sky. They make the journey. They inquire of the place where the king will be born. On hearing of Bethlehem, they go, they see, they worship. There is a willingness to be led by the God who is revealing himself. There is the blessing of joy and gladness found in the baby at Bethlehem. The baby who will grow to speak words of eternal wisdom and all-encompassing peace, who will preach about his love that lays down his life for others, who will speak of worldwide justice, of peace for our souls, of an eternal kingdom, of fullness of life, of forgiveness and cleansing through his death and resurrection. Later in his account, Matthew will quote an ancient prophecy that Jesus fulfills. A bruised reed he will not break. A smoldering wick he will not snuff out till he has brought justice through to victory. In his name, the nations will put their hope. To our warring hearts, Jesus alone brings peace. Now that is a gift. Justice, hope, love, peace. It puts all our Christmases, our Christmas presents into a context, doesn't it? We all know what it's like for our presents to wear out, our stuff to give up. The jumper gets a hole in it, the chocolates are eaten, the puzzle is completed, the Xbox game finished. What if there was a joy that never ended? Fullness unimaginable. Life beyond imagining. That didn't just last for forever, but was inexhaustible and infinite in blessing and joy. Wouldn't that be worthy of our praise and adoration, of our worship? And that is found in the baby before these wise men. It's found in Jesus Christ. Can I ask, what do you worship? We all worship something. We all give our life to something. I watched a brilliant documentary on Netflix recently, Bobby Robson, More Than a Manager. It was all about Robson's life in football. Manager of so many great football clubs like PSV, Barcelona, of course England. And it really was his life. At one point in the documentary, he looks straight into the camera and states, "Football is my God." He worshipped the game. And yet when he died at the age of 76 from cancer, the wise person surely asks, was it worth it? As genuine and lovely a man as he was, as great as the game is, was it worth it? Does football really answer life's deepest questions? Herod chooses war. The wise men choose worship. And every so often in our lives, like at Christmas, we are confronted again with the same choice about Jesus Christ. And we always make a choice. We always respond. So let me ask you, how are you making yours? A few years ago, Daniel Kahneman, Nobel Prize winner and senior scholar at Princeton, published a book that became an international bestseller. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow. Kahneman explores the basic hypothesis widely accepted in psychology, that we all think in two ways. Kahneman labels them System 1 and System 2. System 1 thinking, he says, is the automatic, quick, intuitive aspect of thinking. When we're detecting whether one object is closer than another, when we're driving a car down an empty road, when we're asked the question 2 plus 2, that way of thinking kicks in. System 2 thinking involves careful, considered thought. When we're filling out a tax form or any form, when we're working through the validity of a logical argument. I think that's incredibly insightful. And I'd want to suggest that often we can react to information or a situation in a kind of System 1, quick, automatic manner, when really engaging System 2, intelligent consideration, examination, looking into something is called for. And I'd want to suggest that that is certainly true when it comes to the Bible and the claims of Jesus Christ. When we hear the claim of Jesus to be the King of the world, God with us, it's easy to be dismissive. But why are we like that? Why not give proper consideration to what Jesus said and did? Why not take away this account of his life? And this Christmas, give it a read. Why not come back and listen to more explanations of what it means to know and love God? Why not chat more with a Christian you may know? For this Christmas, let's understand that our choices have consequences. Have you ever considered whether in dismissing Jesus, in not bowing before him as king, you're making the wrong choice? We do make the wrong choices often. When Mozart was in Vienna early on in his career, he was looking for work as a composer, and he managed to gain an audience with the Archduke Ferdinand. However, it was unproductive, for unknown to Mozart, the Archduke's mother, Empress Maria Theresa, had counseled her son against hiring Mozart, whom she haughtily dismissed as useless. Fancy calling Mozart useless. It's one of those great historical gaffes, but it begs the question, doesn't it? What are you saying about Jesus? And remember that no choice is a choice. We live in an age where people are reluctant often to make decisions, to decide something is right or wrong. After all, who are we to speak in absolute terms? We like to hedge our bets, keep our options open. We try and do that with religion. Always lead to God, we say. Don't all religions basically say, they say the same thing? But Jesus doesn't leave us with that option. He preached that he was the only way to God, and that it was only through worshipping him with the whole of our lives that we find peace and eternal life to come. He preached that only through trusting in him alone for forgiveness for our wrongs can that forgiveness be found. Jesus calls us to listen to what he says about himself, the world, you, me, God, his kingdom. He calls us to look at the historical account of his life, what he did, ultimately dying a sacrificial death on a cross and rising 3 days later. And he calls us to believe in him, to end our rebellious warfare and to worship, to choose life, not death, to see peace with God of greater worth than momentary prosperity and pleasure, which will soon fade away. Many of our choices are incidental. Some are more significant, a few life-changing. But Jesus claims that our choice about him is the choice that stands not just at the center of history, but that shapes our eternal destiny. This Christmas, let's choose to listen to the message of the angels and join with the angel's song, "Glory to the newborn King, peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Light and life to all he brings, risen with healing in his wings."